Okay. All being combined. Karmani in the journey. Yata engaged with full attention and effort. Cha and Abhasade, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aramukha, because of being non-devotees. Translation, Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, the demons and Daityas, all engaged with full attention and effort in churning the ocean, but because they were not devotees of Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, they were not able to drink the nectar. Text 2, O King, after the Supreme Personality of Godhead brought to completion the affairs of churning the ocean and feeding the nectar to the demigods or his dear devotees, he left the presence of them all and was carried by Garuda to his own abode. Seeing the victory of the demigods, the demons became intolerant of their superior opulence. Thus, they began to march towards the demigods with raised weapons. Thereafter, being enlivened because of drinking the nectar, the demigods, who were always at the shelter of the lotus feet of Narayan, used their various weapons to counteract the demons and the fighting spirit. O King, a fierce battle on the beach of the ocean of milk ensued between the demigods and the demons. The fighting was so terrible that simply hearing about it would make the hair on one's body stand on end. Both parties in that fight were extremely angry at heart and in enmity. They beat one another with swords, arrows, and various other weapons. There are always two kinds of men in the universe, not only on this planet, but also in higher planetary systems. All the kings dominating planets like the sun and moon also have enemies like Rahu. It's because of occasional attacks upon sun and moon by Rahu that eclipses take place. The fighting between the demons and demigods is perpetual. It cannot be stopped unless intelligent persons from both sides take to Krishna consciousness. The sounds of tongue shells, bugles, drums, medis, and dummeries, as well as the sounds made by the elephants, horses, and soldiers, who were both on chariots and on foot, were tumultuous. On that battlefield, the charioteers fought with the opposing charioteers, the infantry soldiers with the opposing infantry, the soldiers on horseback with the opposing soldiers on horseback, and the soldiers on the backs of elephants with the enemy soldiers on elephants. In this way, the fighting took place between peoples. Some soldiers fought on the backs of camels, some on the backs of elephants, some on asses, some on white-faced and red-faced monkeys, some on tigers, and some on lions. In this way, they all engaged in fighting. Okay, some soldiers fought on the backs of vultures, eagles, ducks, hawks, and basha birds. Some fought on the backs of Timingalas, which can devour huge whales, some on the backs of sarabas, some on buffalo, rhinoceros, cows, bulls, jungle cows, and arunas. Others fought on the backs of jackals, rats, lizards, rabbits, human beings, goats, black deer, swans, and boars. In this way, mountain animals, the water, land, and the sky, including animals with deformed bodies, both armies faced each other and went forward. O King, O descendant of Maharaj Pandu, the soldiers of both the demigods and demons were decorated by canopies, colorful flags, umbrellas, and handles made of valuable jewels and pearls. They were further decorated by fans made of peacock feathers and by other fans also. The soldiers, their upper and lower garments waving in the breeze, naturally looked very beautiful, and in the light of the glittering sunlight, their shields, ornaments, and sharp clean weapons appeared dazzling. Thus the ranks of soldiers seemed like two oceans with bands of aquatics. For that battle, the most celebrated commander-in-chief, Maharaj Bali, son of Virochana, was seated on a wonderful airplane named Vihayasa. O King, this beautifully decorated airplane had been manufactured by the demon Maya and was equipped with weapons for all kinds of combat. It was inconceivable and indescribable. Indeed, it was sometimes visible and sometimes not. Seated in this airplane upon a beautiful protective umbrella and under a beautiful protective umbrella and being fanned by the best of Chamaras. Maharaj Bali, surrounded by his captains and commanders, appeared just like the moon rising in the evening, illuminating all directions. Surrounding Maharaj Bali on all sides were commanders and captains of the demons, sitting on their respective chariots. Among them were the following demons: Namoshu Shabaravana, Viprachati, Ayonoka, Dvi Murda, Kalanava, Praheti Heti, Ilva, Sakuni, Bhuta, Santapa, Vajradamstra, Virokshana Hayagriva, Shankar Shira, Kapapila, Mega Dundavi, Tara, Chakradra, Tsumba, Nishumba, Jamba, Utkala, Arishta, Arishtanemi, Tripuradipa, Mayan, the son of Paloma, and the Kalakeyas and Nivada Kavachas. All of these demons had been deprived of their share of the nectar and had shared merely in the labor of churning the ocean. Now they fought against the demigods and to encourage their armies, they made a tumultuous sound with the roaring of lions and blew loudly on conch shells, while of Rick Lord Indra. Upon seeing the situation of his ferocious rivals, became extremely angry. Sitting on Airavata, the elephant, an elephant who can go anywhere and who holds water and wine in reserve for showering, Lord Indra looked just like the sun rising upon Udayagiri, where there are reservoirs of water. Report on top of the mountain in Udayagiri are large lakes from which water constantly pours in waterfalls. Similarly, Indra's carrier, Airavata, holds water and wine in reserve and showers in the direction of Lord Indra. Thus, Indra, king of heaven, sitting on the back of Airavata, appeared like the brilliant sun rising above Udayagiri. Surrounding Lord Indra, king of heaven, were the demigods, seated on various types of vehicles and decorated with flags and weapons. Present among them were Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other rulers of various planets, along with their associates. The demigods and demons came before each other and reproached one another with words piercing to the heart. Then they drew near and began fighting face to face in pairs. Okay, Maharaj Bali fought with Indra, Kartikeya with Taraka, Varuna with Haiti, and Mitra with Prahiti. Yamaraj fought with Kalanava, Vishukarma with Mayadanava, Pashta with Sambara, and the sun god with Virochana. The demigods Parajita fought with Namuchi, the two Aswini Kumar brothers fought with Vrsha Parva. The sun god fought with 100 sons of Maharaj Bali headed by Bana, and the moon god fought with Rahu. The demigods controlling air fought with Puloma, and Sumba and Shumba fought with the supremely powerful material energy Durga Devi, who was called Bhadra Kali. O Maharaj Parikshit, suppressor of enemies, Lord Shiva fought with Jamba and Vishnu. Vibhavasu fought with Mahishasura. Ilavala, along with his brother Vitapi, fought the sons of Lord Brahma. Durmarsha fought with Cupid, the demon Utkala with Matruka, demigoddesses, Brihaspati with Supracharya, and Sinai's Charasaka with Narakasura. The Maruks fought Nivada Kavacha. The Vasus fought the Kalakeya demons. The Vishvadeva demigods fought the Pavuloma demons. And Rudras fought Krodha Vasa demons, who were victims of anger. All of these demigods and demons assembled in the battlefield with a fighting spirit and attacked one another with great strength. All of them desired victory. They fought in pairs, hitting one another severely with sharpened arrows, swords, and lances. They severed one another's heads using weapons like Bhushundis, Chakras, Gloves, Rishtis, Patishas, Saktis, Umukas, Prasas, Parasvadas, Nishrimsas, Lanshas, Parigas, Mudgaras, and Bindi Palas. The elephants, horses, chariots, charioteers, infantry soldiers, and various kinds of carriers, along with their riders, were slashed to pieces. The arms, thighs, necks, and legs of the soldiers were severed, and their flags, bows, armor, and ornaments were torn apart. Because of the impact on the ground of the legs of the demons and demigods and the wheels of the chariots, Part of us is dust. Why, out of the sky I made a dust cloud that covered all directions of outer space as far as the sun. But when the particles of dust were followed by the drops of love being sprinkled all over space, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. Wherefore, the cloud of dust covered the entire horizon, and blood, drops of blood sprayed up as far as the sun, and the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. A point to be observed here is that although the blood is stated to have reached the sun, it is not said to have reached the moon. Apparently, therefore, as stated elsewhere at Shumabai, with the sun, not the moon, is the planet nearest the Earth. We have already discussed this point in many places. The sun is first, then the moon, then Mars, Jupiter, and so on. The sun is supposed to be 93 million miles above the surface of the Earth. And from Shumabai, when we understand the moon is 1,600,000 miles above the Earth. Is that right? Okay. Therefore, the distance between the Earth and the Moon would be about 95 million miles. So, if a space capsule were traveling at a speed of 18,000 miles an hour, how could it reach the Moon in 4 days at that speed? Going to the Moon would take at least several months. That a space capsule on a moon excursion has reached the moon in 4 days is therefore impossible. In the course of the battle, the war field became strewn with severed heads of heroes, their eyes still staring and their teeth still pressed against their lips in anger. Helmets and earrings were scattered from these severed heads. Similarly, many arms decorated with ornaments and clutching various weapons were strewn here and there, as were many legs and thighs, which resembled the trunks of elephants. Many headless trunks were generated from the battle on the battlefield. With weapons in their arms, those ghostly trunks, which could see with the eyes the fallen heads, attacked the enemy soldiers. Purport appears that heroes who died in the battlefield immediately became ghosts, and although their heads had been severed from their new bodies, new trunks were generated, and these new trunks, seeing with the eyes of the severed heads, began to attack the enemy. In other words, many ghosts were generated to join the fight, and thus new trunks appeared on the battlefield. Maharaj Bali then attacked Indra with 10 arrows, and attacked Airavata, Indra's carrier elephant, with 3 arrows. With 4 arrows, he attacked the 4 horsemen guarding Airavata's legs, and with 1 arrow, he attacked the elephant, driver of the elephant. Report the word Vahan refers to the soldiers on horseback who protected the legs of the carrier elephants. According to the system military arrangement, the legs of the elephant bearing the commander were also protected. Before Bali Maharaj's army arrows could reach him, Indra, King of Heaven, who is expert in dealing with arrows, smiled and counteracted the arrows with arrows of another type known as Vala, which were extremely sharp. When Bali Maharaj saw the expert military activities of Indra, he could not restrain his anger. Thus, he took up another weapon known as Shakti, which blazed like a great firebrand. But Indra cut that weapon to pieces while it was still in Bali's hand. Thereafter, one by one, Bali Maharaj used a lance, prasa, Homara, Rishtis, and other weapons, but whatever weapon he took up, Indra immediately cut them to pieces. My dear King, Bali Maharaj then disappeared and resorted to demoniac illusions. A giant mountain generated from illusion then appeared above the heads of the demigod soldiers. From that mountain fell trees blazing in a forest fire. Chips of stone with sharp edges like picks also fell and smashed the heads of the demigod soldiers. Scorpions, large snakes, and many other poisonous animals, as well as lions, tigers, boars, and great elephants, all began falling upon the demigod soldiers, crushing everything. Oh, my king, many hundreds of male and female carnivorous demons, completely naked and carrying tridents in their hands, then appeared, crying the slogan, "Cut them to pieces, cut them to pieces." Fierce clouds, harassed by strong winds, then appeared in the sky, rumbling very gravely with the sound of thunder that began to shower live coals. A great devastating fire created by Bali Maharaj then began burning all the soldiers of the demigods. This fire, accompanied by blasting winds, seemed as terrible as a Samvartaka fire, which appeared at the time of dissolution. Thereafter, whirlpools of sea waves, agitated by fierce blasts of wind, appeared everywhere before everyone's vision in a furious flood. While this magical atmosphere in the fight was being created by the invisible demons, who were expert in such illusions, the soldiers of the demigods became morose. O king, when the demigods could find no way to counteract the activities of the demons, they wholeheartedly meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the universe, who then immediately appeared. The Supreme Personality of God of his eyes resembled the petals of a newly blossomed lotus, sat on the back of Garuda, spread his lotus feet over Garuda's shoulders, dressed in yellow, decorated by the Kastuba gem and the goddess of fortune, and wearing an invaluable helmet and earrings, the Supreme Lord, holding various weapons in his eight hands, became visible to the demigods. As the dangers of a dream cease when the dreamer awakens, the illusions created by the jugglery of the demons were vanquished by the transcendental prowess of the Supreme Personality of God as soon as he entered the battlefield. Indeed, since by remembrance of the Supreme Personality of God, one is free from all dangers. O king, when the demon Kalanemi, who was carried by a lion, saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, carried by Garuda, was in the battlefield, the demon immediately took his trident, whirled it, and discharged it at Garuda's head. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the master of the three worlds, immediately caught the trident, and with the very same weapon, he killed the enemy, Kalanemi, along with his carrier, the lion. In this regard, Madhvacharya says, Kalanemi and all the other demons were killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, and when Sukracharya, the spiritual master, brought them back to life, they were again killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thereafter, two very powerful demons named Mali and Sumali were killed by the Supreme Lord, who severed their heads with his disc. Then Maliyavan, another demon, attacked the Lord with his sharp club. The demon, who was roaring like a lion, attacked Garuda, the Lord of the Birds, who was born from eggs. But the Supreme Personality of God, the original person, used his disc to cut off the head of that demon also. Thus ended the Bhagavad-gita purports of 8th canto, 10th chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, titled Battle Between Demigods and Demons. So this is just a description of the battle that took place after the Devatas got the nectar. So there's nothing very philosophical in this section. It's simply a description of the battle. Of course, as Prabhupada here comments, the conflict between the demons and the Devatas, or between the devotees and the materialists, is continually present in the universe, whether it's on this planet or elsewhere. And that is because the jivas are of various varieties, and consequently human beings are of various types. So in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna says there are two types of persons, the demons and the devotees, when he's talking to Arjuna. And we see in the Bhagavatam, when Brahma begins creating the various creatures, then we find that he creates devatas and he also creates demons. So there is constantly a conflict between the two groups. The devatas, or the devotees, follow the Supreme Lord and they recognize him and they follow his laws. The demons do not recognize the Lord and they refuse to follow his laws. And they simply want to enjoy in the material world. Therefore, a conflict arises. And we see this is one of the conflicts. Demons try to take away the power of the devatas and rule the whole universe. So they get up to Swargaloka and they try to remove Indra from his post and Bali takes control or whatever. So this is one example here. We see the example with Vamana Deva again. Bali takes control. So over and over there is this attempt of the demons to take control of the universe. So this is natural for persons in the lower modes of nature. If they're in tamogun and rajogun, naturally they think of their own enjoyment. And they think in terms of competition and separateness. And we see the demons themselves, once they got the nectar, they began to quarrel among themselves. So they're thinking of themselves mainly. But sometimes they get into a group and then they will attack the devatas, or persons who are favoring the Supreme Lord. So this conflict is there from the beginning of Brahma's day to the end of Brahma's day. And when the demons become too strong and the devatas become weak, and then generally the devatas request the Supreme Lord to intervene. So therefore we have Vamana appearing, or we have Varaha appearing to counteract the demons. And in this case we see during the battle, the Lord manifested himself because of the illusions created by the demons, like Kalanemi and others. Previous to this, the devatas prayed to the Supreme Lord because the demons had stolen the nectar, and the Lord came as Mohini Avatar. So sometimes the Lord appears as an avatar to save the devatas from a miserable situation. If he doesn't appear directly, then of course he somehow empowers the devatas so that they can overcome the demons and again restore order in the universe. So, though there is a conflict in the universe at all times, the Lord favors the restoration of Dharma, protection of the devatas, etc., and the devotees. So he's not exactly equal to everybody. Okay, let the demons win, let them take control. If there is a, when the demons take this position, then the Lord will interfere. So, of course, we can accuse the Lord, oh, the Lord is playing favorites. And it is true, because the Lord says, I favor my devotee. The Lord makes certain laws in the universe, and he expects people to follow them. And if people don't follow, then he does something to rectify the situation. So the Lord is sama in one sense, or equal to everyone, because he doesn't hate anyone. Still, he will favor the devotees, the devatas, implementation of Dharma, etc., in all cases. So we should not think that the Lord is indifferent. However, though that is said, the Lord favors the devotees, sometimes the devotees are like, the Lord is not favoring us because we're in a miserable position. Yeah? And it reaches such a degree of bewilderment that sometimes the devotees say, we cannot understand the Lord's plan. Why is it the devotees are suffering so much? So this is a constant question that the devotees ask. And Bhishma will say this on the battlefield. I cannot understand the Lord's position. Why is it that he seems to forget the Pandavas and he seems to suffer in the material world or whatever? You know, why Draupadi has to suffer? Sometimes the position becomes very critical and looks like the Lord forgets the devotees. But it isn't so. He is always remembering the devotees. And in the case of the great devotees, it may become also very extreme. In that case, the Lord does this simply so that those devotees think of the Lord more. So in this case, we see that when the battle became extreme, and the devatas were almost giving up. Then what did? They thought of the Supreme Lord. So they were more or less forced to think of the Supreme Lord. And when immediately thought of the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Lord appeared, and suddenly all the illusions vanished. So, for those who are very advanced, often the Lord will seem to be indifferent, and then this provides an opportunity for the devotee to surrender more and remember the Lord. And then the Lord appears. In other cases, devotees are not so advanced. And the Lord may also not seem to manifest himself or interfere in their affairs, and they may seem to suffer also. In this case, the advice given is that the devotee should persevere in his bhakti also, just as the nityasiddhas also never give up faith. One who's practicing bhakti should also have that faith in the Supreme Lord. He cannot understand his plan, nevertheless he tolerates the situation in the material world. And he continues his service. That continuation of his service is the sign, or the symptom, or the, we can say the quality of the devotee that the Lord appreciates. And then he gives mercy to that devotee. So in this way, the Lord, we can say, is testing the devotee. And if he survives that test, then the Lord is very pleased with him and he gives mercy. But the devotee of the Lord, if he is quite mature, then he does not care for deliverance from his miserable circumstances or whatever. Rather, he simply prays to the Supreme Lord to somehow be engaged in his service at all times. So that is the sign of a very mature devotee in his services. One who is not mature may be praying for deliverance from material conditions. So if that becomes constant, that is not called pure bhakti. It is called karma mistra bhakti. We have material desires mixed with our devotion. But that's not considered a very advanced stage. But the Lord also accepts that as better than simply practicing karma yoga or other, not worshiping the Lord at all. So to some degree, the Lord is pleased with that also. But he is more pleased with a devotee who simply does not request anything and practices his bhakti. So that is a higher position. And the Lord, therefore, responds to him differently and awards him pure bhakti in the spiritual world. So the result for that devotee is much greater. So here we find the devatas were in a very miserable position. And what did they do? They thought of the Supreme Lord. And immediately the Lord came, and suddenly all the illusions vanished. So this is an example where the Lord immediately responded and solved the situation for the devatas. So when the devatas were in this miserable position, and then they thought of the Supreme Lord. So we can say, well, they were in a miserable position, so they thought of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, this is not pure bhakti. And sometimes we say, yes, the devatas had mixed bhakti, etc. However, thinking of the Supreme Lord in a miserable position is not simply a sign of mixed bhakti, because we see the Pandavas also think of the Supreme Lord when they're in a miserable position. So, thinking of the Supreme Lord in misery is not simply mixed bhakti. It can be a sign of complete surrender. We see there is sharanagati, or surrender, and there are six symptoms of surrender. One of the symptoms is to depend on the Lord completely. So in any situation, good or bad situation, the devotee depends on the Lord. So when they're in a dangerous situation or miserable situation, they also depend on the Lord. It provides a good opportunity for them. So therefore, when one is in a dangerous position and surrenders to the Lord, it's not always a sign of mixed bhakti. So we see the pure devotees or the nityasiddhas also surrender to the Lord in that position. So it's a sign of surrender as well. But when there is constant requests to the Supreme Lord for deliverance from misery or to get material benefits, then that becomes what we call mixed bhakti. When it is a constant thing. When it is temporary or occasional only, then there's not a problem. And one can still be considered to having pure bhakti. So in this case of misery, the Devatas thought of the Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Lord responded very enthusiastically, and he helped the Devatas. So we see in this whole pastime that the Lord continually helps. He continually appears. He came as Mohini, he came as Tanvantara, he came as Ajitata, and here he comes again in the battlefield. Yeah? So he's very liberal in helping the Devatas, which means that he has great favor for them, because personally appearing for them. Yeah? However, the other aspect is that he's appearing also to perform this pastime to favor those in the material world who don't get an opportunity to directly meet the Lord, so that by hearing these pastimes, one can see the great enthusiasm the Lord has for aiding the devotees. So it becomes an inspiration for other devotees who don't get a chance to meet the Lord directly. Well, the rudras are expansion. Think of the 11 rudras. They're expansions from Shiva. Ekadas rudras. Yeah, so he's there's Shiva, the main person who's manifests himself from Lord Brahma. And then he expands into these 11 forms of rudra. They're secondary forms. Well, we see at the when Brahma does the creation, he creates all sorts of living entities, and they have certain powers. So we have human beings, they have some power, but they're quite insignificant in one sense. Then he creates all these other creatures like Gandharvas and others, they have their particular powers. And he creates these demons, they're also like a species almost, with their particular powers. So by their nature, they have these powers, great powers. Daitya is the sons of Diti, a great power. And we get Pranikastipu and Hiranyaksha, great power. Because of how they're born and with their particular the dynasties coming out of them. So by nature, they have great powers. A whole species of daityas coming from Diti. They do, yeah. That's because they do have such power, they can do such great austerities also. But by their nature, they have great powers, and they're endowed with a lot of tamagun and rajagun, and they get great powers just by their nature. More than regular human beings. So they're not just human beings, they're something else. There, and the donkeys and rhinoceroses and snakes and even fish. Because there's different jivas with different desires and different mentalities, so they get their different bodies accordingly. And those jivas that really in tamagun rajagun with intense desires, then they become demons. Huh? Karma, through karmas. And the entity appears three times. He's three times in the day of Brahma. Yeah, that'll be until the end of the Manvantara. No, I don't think so. It's the same one. Well, as I said, it's this variety in creation. We have Rajagun, Tamagun, and Sattvagun, and we have different animals, and we have different plants, and we have human beings, and we have devatas, and we have demons, and all sorts of beings in between. All the different personalities and Bhuvarloka, etc. And we have all the entities in Pataloka, etc. Because of nature. The different jivas have different natures, so they get different bodies. Well, those are human beings, obviously. They don't have such great power. But again, Rajagun, Tamagun, etc. Previous experience. Let's keep going on. But as a human being, we have a chance to choose our situation to get different experiences. It's animals, not much choice. Human beings, we have a choice. We have a choice of where we want to live to some degree, not completely, but to some degree. We have a choice of association of people we want to be with. Then we can change ourselves, and then our impressions begin to change. So that's the human being.
இது பார்க்கணும் நீங்கள் ரொம்பனா எடுத்துருக்கு டிவி மகாபாரத்தை பார்க்கணும் இந்த மாதிரி சொல்றது அப்படியே இருக்கு.